you may have seen, is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Now offering video visits so you can take control of your orthopedic care from the comfort of your home. Schedule online at orthocarolina.com. Ortho Carolina, you improved.
Actors, right? The road to fame and celebrity. All right, I get it. You've had an incredible life.
Aren't you sick of hearing about them?
Me too.
The only problem is, I'm one of them. Except I'm not famous. Oh, you've probably seen me. A bunch of times. I'm the guy with the information about the hero's dad. I'm the doctor that can't figure out what's wrong with one of the main characters. I'm the guy they just punched in the face during the interrogation. My name's Brian LaFontaine, and I'm a professional actor. Oh, and it's not just me. There's a ton of us.
We're the ones you don't hear about.
Yeah, we're the names that scroll by at lightning speed during the end credits, but there's way more of us than there are of them. We're important too, dammit, because without us, they can't tell the rest of the story. So this is for all the movie and TV prostitutes, homeless people, drug dealers, cab drivers, cops numbers 2, 3, and sometimes 4, the pilots, the waitresses, and girl at party.
This is You May Have Seen. Hello! Welcome to You May Have Seen. I love doing this podcast. I really do. I love having these conversations with all these actors and artists of all walks of life. Why do I keep having these guests on that make me feel like I'm the laziest person in show business? Probably because I'm the laziest person in show business. Like today, it's my good friend David Cornu. David is an incredibly talented writer, producer, musician, composer that I've had the honor of knowing for more than a decade. Even worse, he's one of the nicest guys you'd ever meet. It's a terrible combination. When I grow up, I want to be more like him. Today, we're going to get into the head of the writer. David and I talk about Triage, his new pilot for ABC, along with so many of his other projects that you may have seen or maybe nobody ever saw. It's the writer's life. So here we go.
Well, well, well.
Oh, my goodness. Look at you. You kind of look like a sexy Bond villain.
I'll take it.
Do you got like a ponytail thing going on?
This is my COVID coif.
Oh my gosh. Dude, you are.
I'm a Bond villain.
You really are, because you look very calm and confident about it. It's like, oh yeah, I'm going
exactly.
to kill you.
Exactly.
And
Brian, that's why I brought you here today.
I'm not going to do it. Right. Little do you know. But you're about
the
to
door
die.
Beneath you is going to open up to sharks.
What are you doing?
What's happening?
What the hell are you doing?
It's good to see you, my friend.
What's going on, man? It's good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Look at you.
Looking good, my friend. Looking good.
You know, I've got a couple weeks of scruff just because, you know, I've had no reason to shave, but that's going to change because I've got an audition I got to put on tape in the next couple days.
Excellent.
And I can't look like this. Yeah, what's happening out there? How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good. Are we doing the thing now? Are we talking? Or are
yeah,
we
we're
not?
Just yeah, we're talking. We're recording. The beauty of editing is
okay.
I can take out anything that I don't like or that makes you sound better than me.
Okay. I figured that would be the case.
You can curse as much as you want.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So yeah, we're just talking. We're talking about you. We're talking about stuff. We're talking about this crazy business and whatever else we decide we want to chat about.
Well, first of all, I have to give you a huge shout out.
Why?
For being on one of my favorite shows of all time, Ozark.
I thought you were going to say Dawson's Creek. I was sure you were a Creek fan.
Oh, right. You know, I've talked to you since then.
Well, thank you.
I already got your autograph for Dawson.
That's right. That's right. That's yeah. right. I got
to
send
I
you.
I now need to get your autograph
oh,
again.
My God.
I want you to sign it, Andrew Wade.
I, you know, and obviously I didn't know at the time that we ended up having a mutual connection as a result of that, which is all tied into stuff that I was going to talk to you about anyway. Yeah, Tom Pelfrey. What a good guy.
He is such a great guy. He was the lead in a movie that I wrote called Lucky Number. It was a
right.
sport comedy.
Yes.
He was so much fun to work with. Just such a great guy.
Absolutely.
Elena and I, we sat down to watch Ozark. I'm like, oh, it's Tom. And then the next episode, we're like, oh, it's Tom. what the hell? Like, when are the Emmys coming for him? He did such a great job with that role.
He really was. He was spectacular. And he did get nominated for something, I think. Did he get nominated for an Emmy as best guest star or something like that?
Emmys were crazy this year, and they did not find Tommy. But he sure did deserve it.
Like, that, the episode where he just had that whole rambling monologue in the back of the taxi cab was incredible.
It was brilliant.
Yeah,
he really did a great job. I texted him after that episode. I was like, dude, what the hell? Like, a whole different level. It's amazing.
All right. So this is the way that this works. This is a little bit different today because for everybody who's listening, I am talking to my good friend, David Cornu, who is he's a hyphenate. He is a writer, producer, composer, actor. I saw an acting credit on your IMDb page.
Let's not break the bank on this one.
But I know primarily you are a writer and then probably producer next and then composer when you get the opportunity.
When I can. Yes,
right.
Yes.
Right. Obviously this is You May Have Seen. Normally we talk to actors, but the industry covers such a broad scope and you and I have known each other for so long and you're absolutely a friend of mine and you've got some wonderful things that have been going on. And I definitely wanted to talk to you about that. Okay. So let's talk about Lucky Numbers then, because you've written some features, you've written some short films, you've written a lot of pilots, you've probably written a bunch of stuff that I'm not even aware of, which I've
written a lot of stuff that a lot of people are not aware
exactly
of.
Exactly. So talk to me about the life of being a writer.
Oh well, I love it. I wake up every day and I want to write something, and so I feel very, very fortunate that I just get to follow my passions. I started off as a songwriter. That mm-hmm. was where it all began for me, and got a classical music composition degree. And so that was really home base. That was my first way of telling stories through music.
Did you really? I don't think I knew that.
Yeah. That was what it was all about. I had a rock band in high school.
Well,
and
that I believe.
I got the hair for it right now.
Right.
And so, you know, I went off and really found musicals in college.
Mm-hmm. Where did you go to school?
Hart School of Music, Hartford, Connecticut. It's a music conservatory.
Oh, okay.
And so from there, I was in New York City and in the theater world, doing a little bit of playwriting, doing a little mm-hmm. bit of songwriting, just ultimately found, hey, I think film and TV is where I live. I love telling stories with music, but I kind of saw the ceiling of the business there.
Right.
And I was like, that's a very low 8-foot ceiling. And I want vaulted ceilings.
I want a skylight. I want something that opens up. Right.
So, so I started to switch gears, and around the same time as one of your previous guests, Millane, and my wife, mm-hmm. She was also a Broadway girl that we kind of met, strangely, not in the theater world, but at the time we were both in the theater world. And she was doing the segue into TV and film at the time. And I was like, hey, I think this is about a good time for me to give this a try. So I've mostly been focused on television. I think that's where I really live. It's interesting because I think as a composer, I can map things out in my head. Some, mm-hmm. like if you think about a symphony, there's all these different lines. Everyone is doing something a little different, right. But it all adds up to something more beautiful. Television is structured very much like that. You can think about a series in that way. So you can really think about the long form arcs for these different storylines that you're introducing. And I love to do that. I love thinking about story in that way. So TV really lends itself to that. But when a feature comes along like Lucky Number, right. I'm always, always happy to do that.
Now, you wrote that. That was your brainchild. That was your idea from start to finish.
Lucky Number was pitched to me, actually. It was Michael Pablo, the head producer on it. He came to me, and it was based on actual events. It was basically, the premise of the story, it's really amazing. This guy in Jersey gets a new phone number mm-hmm. and starts getting all these texts saying, hey, you want to come into this party, so-and-so VIP pass, free everything.
Right.
He's like, who the hell had this number before? Well, it turns out it was I'm not going to say the name of the person, but it was a very famous sports star.
Okay.
Who had ditched the number.
Oh my
gosh. So he took these opportunities coming his way through texts and was like, can't make it. but I'm going to send my buddy Brett. And the world opens up to this guy and he's getting into all these different places. So I wrote the feature for it where it's a big basketball star who had the number, and this kid from Jersey takes his phone and runs with it and then gets his comeuppance for it.
Now, Milena was in that as well.
She was.
Correct?
She was.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, what is it about you with this woman?
Oh,
I mean, why don't you just marry her? Jeez. How many projects have you guys done together?
Oh, my God. It's so hard to parse out because I think everything she does, she talks to me about before she does it.
Sure.
And I'm her sounding board and she's my sounding board. So nothing goes out the door without Milena Govich having her eyes on it first. And I'll tell you, she's harder than any network executive in this town.
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt that. Yeah. For everybody who's listening. Yeah. You may remember the interview with Milena. Actually, she's been on a couple times. She did one of my COVID check-ins to see how everybody was doing out there during the time as well. We love her. She is fantastic. And we're glad that she married you as well.
I couldn't
because
agree more.
That's a tricky dynamic, you know, to be working with your spouse, especially because you guys, you know, met and lived and came together in New York City, which is a very claustrophobic city.
Yeah.
You're not living in a big giant apartment.
No, we lived in a 425 square foot apartment for the first 5 years of marriage. And my father, he's like, you know, that's equivalent to 20 years of marriage, right? He's like, you have no doors to slam. How do you do it?
Right. And then beyond just tolerating each other to where, you know, again, from a New York City living standpoint, because I know what it's like to the experience of living in New York City. And I lived by myself and it was just like, man, oh, I need space. And then you guys decide to like, hey, let's collaborate and let's do creative projects together. And again, how are you still existing? How have you not, like, no one's
I don't yet. Know how we got so lucky, but we just simply can't get enough of each other. We really are kind of just crazy about each other, and we don't fight. We just don't have arguments, you know, and we just get each other.
Yeah.
We get each other's sensibilities. And I think it's always, I mean, I think the trick to any good marriage is to be each other's biggest fan. Sure. And I really think we somehow just tapped into that from day one, and we've been having fun with it ever since. So we're looking for more opportunities to work together. You know, she segued from acting to directing about 4 or 5 years ago. And I was team director I've been telling her for many years, you are a natural born director. You have the leadership ability. You have the vision. You know how to articulate that to people. And finally, she was like, you know, I think I want to try this directing thing. I was like, great. Let's go out tonight. Let's go out. And I took her out to a Chinese restaurant and I said, okay, we're not getting up from this table until we know what your first short film is. And I'm going to write it for you.
Oh my
God.
And I'm going to
produce it for you. And we figured out what it was. I just did kind of a Brian LaFontaine style interview with her. I did. I got her talking about, what do you really want to talk about right now?
Wow.
And you know, she had recently lost her grandmother, who was just this spectacular human being. And it was a really difficult end to her life. The final chapter of her life was painful for her and for everyone. And Milena wanted to tap into some of that energy. And we found a sort of twisted Coen Brothers-esque way of getting into it. I wrote it. She directed it. I scored the music. She played the music. Played the violin. So we were a two-person band on it. And so from there, it's just the more we're like, we love this. Let's do more of it. So she got into AFI. We did her next short film, which is a proof of concept for one of my TV projects.
Okay.
And let's keep going. Let's keep doing it.
Yeah, because you did. You guys did some wonderful short films together. You did Temporary, which is the one that you were first speaking of. I saw that one. That's the one I came out to.
Great.
I was in LA at the time. Remember, I saw that.
That's right.
Yes. Because that was the one that was based on, you said her grandmother.
Her grandmother.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And I did. I love, because short films are so tough because it's a short film. And, you know, usually I always have a hard time watching them because, you know, they're either really, really dark or just really not done well, or and all of a sudden they just end and there's no point, or they're very cliche. And what you guys did was so entertaining, and it was more colorful, and it was brighter, and it was vibrant, and it was humorous in its own way. And it was just like, yay. That to me was a successful short film for somebody who's trying to, I guess, promote themselves or showcase themselves as a director, as a writer, as you guys were doing. That was a great, great little film. I thought it was really, really great. I didn't get to see Unspeakable, which I think is the one that followed.
That's right. That's the AFI project. And that is more of a setup concept for a larger series. So it is supposed to leave you with a big question mark at the end to say, I want to know more.
Right.
And you go, well, I happen to have a few scripts you can read.
Yeah, and that had some success to it as well, didn't it?
It did. We premiered at South by Southwest.
Awesome.
And again, I got to score that, and Milena played the violin beautifully on that score. Just, it's so good. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was another successful outing in the short film arena.
When I knew you when you were living in New York, and then you guys, you know, packed up the trailer, moved across the country to go to L.A., because you wanted to try and really get into, you know, television writing. So, boom, take me from there. That whole experience, David showing up in LA for the first time. I want to be a writer in Hollywood. How was that journey? What was that adventure like?
Bumpy. look, you know, if you want to be a writer in Hollywood, you have got to love the writing part. You know, writing isn't what I do, it's who I am. I've written something since day one. I wake up and I have to get ideas out of my head to feel normal. And
wow.
So that's what keeps you going. It's a game of perseverance, mm-hmm. like a lot of things in life. But you know, things come in steps, and you think this is the one. You have some great pitch meeting.
Right.
They're basically shaking your hand. You know, it's the glad handing at the end of the meeting. Like, okay, we'll be in touch soon. This is really good. And then, you know, agent calls you the next day. Yeah, they hate you. Well, I mean, that's a little hyperbolic, but that's kind of what it feels like. And every writer in town has the Hollywood story, the one that like, you absolutely need a glass of whiskey before you start talking about it.
Oh, Jesus.
And so I've had my fair share of those, but I think that fortunately, again, mm-hmm. I have a great partner. We choose to be happy and
good.
And that's the thing. Like when we make a toast, we also have learned, don't get over your skis in this town. Like you never think too far ahead.
Mm-hmm.
We're sitting down at dinner. What can we toast today? What happened today that we can toast?
That's awesome.
Not what can we toast that might happen tomorrow?
Right.
That's a really good way to stay sane in this town.
Sure. That's really good.
You celebrate the many successes. It keeps you humble and it keeps you present and grounded. So yeah, that's the 10 years of my story in LA as a writer.
You know, and yeah. I mean, that's good information and good advice. Honestly, just where we are right now, for sure. You know, because I don't know how many times we've talked about it, whether it's in interviews that I've done or just with people in regular conversations. I mean, what has gone on in the world over the last year? Staying grounded, staying humble, staying present, being thankful, and not getting ahead because who the hell knows what tomorrow is going to be like. You know, that's critical right now. And it's not easy to do.
It's not easy to do. I think this past year, you know, as the human race has gone through this together, mm-hmm. you know, it's an opportunity to pull some lessons from it. They've been difficult lessons for people to have. But, you know, if you can just, you know, I have this orange tree blossoming in the backyard right mm-hmm. now. And like, I'm a Central New York boy, like
yeah.
I have an orange tree in my backyard. And it smelled that good. Like you take those things in. And I think this past year, it was a really good reminder to like, just approach every day like it's your last. And what can you find around you? What sort of beauty in the present moment can you find? It's a difficult thing to harness, and it always ebbs and flows, you know, like everything in life, but it's a good thing to keep trying to come back to.
I appreciate that reminder. I personally appreciate that reminder, because I hate to say that we've been in this phase of life now for so long that it's actually become kind of normal in some ways. So it's so easy to fall back into old patterns and old habits and lose sight of the things that were so apparent when all this started. You know, man, God, humans are crazy. We are nuts, which I can understand now. It makes more sense why you wake up every day going, I'm going to write this. I'm going to write this. We're all fucking nuts. There's so many stories. I can't even tell them all.
Believe me. I mean, that's what keeps me sane. Milena's, when she reads some of my stuff, she's like, how are you so dark? You're such a nice person. Like, I was like, I'm a nice person because I write this. Yeah. I write it down and get it out of me.
I would have killed you a long time ago. I guess, you know, because I did actually have that question. How the hell have you not lost your freaking mind? But I think you may have just answered it, because as a writer, to me, being a writer, because I know what it's like being an actor, being a writer seems so solitary and so confined that it's just you and your laptop or a pad or a typewriter, if you're old, whatever your method is, and constant writing and rewriting and editing and rewriting and throwing it away and starting from scratch until you finally have something completed that you go, okay, this is worthy of submission. I don't know. And then, like you said, to go to the meeting and then have them go, this is really great. Yes, we are gonna. No, they hated. They hated us. They hated us. Like, how have you not lost your freaking mind?
I mean, it is amazing how many different things you need to master to sell a show in this town. And it's a lot more about what happens once you're done with the writing. Mm-hmm. The writing is the escape. It's where you are in control. I mean, you literally get to go and build a world and be the master of it. It's
right.
So I never have an issue with that or the loneliness. I mean, there are cliches about writers that they're all introverts.
Yeah.
And I try to buck that, you know, wherever I can, but I am naturally an introvert. I go to a party mm-hmm. and I can put on good extrovert. I'm putting on good extrovert for you right now.
No, I get you it. Know? I get it.
At the end of the party, Milena is a natural extrovert. So yes. She comes home from the party and she's like, yay, let's go do some more party. And she's energized by it. I'm like, need to take a nap.
Right.
So,
right.
So, I mean, that's, I never tire of sitting down and writing. Mm-hmm. What's challenging is going in and selling. And I've gotten much better at that over time. Yeah. I figured out what it is that you need to do. And it's actually a lot simpler than I used to make it. I think what it is you go in and you speak from the heart. That's that simple. You speak mm-hmm. with passion. I don't write things that I'm not passionate about.
Right.
If I go in and just tell them, here's why I love it, they listen, you know? And there's this thing about pitching a show in LA mm-hmm. where you're supposed to start your pitch with this little anecdote, you know, something from your life. And I used to be like, that's such bullshit. Can I just talk to you about my show without trying to manufacture some reason why it harkens back to my experience? And then I was like, no, that's actually the whole jam right there. If you can't relate it to yourself on some deep personal level, you haven't mm-hmm. found your show yet. When I started doing that, things started to turn in this town. So
yeah,
that was a big lesson for me, to just walk in with authenticity.
Right. Which in a town that's known for its superficiality is, boy, that's, talk about thinking outside of the box.
Well, I would say this. There is a part of this town that is definitely superficial. That culture is out there. In New York, we had Milena's group of friends and David's mm-hmm. group of friends, and we're still very tight with all of them. But you have to really want to see someone in LA. Like in New York, it's, hey, we're going to be at West Side Tavern.
Right.
If you want to stop by and say hello, great. You didn't have to plan anything. Here it's like, okay, we're putting it on the calendar for 3.5 weeks from today at 7:30. Don't flake. Don't be a flake. And
that is the term, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you get one shot with us. If you're one of those Hollywood flakes, cool, but we're not interested. But if you're a real human being who's craving finding other real human beings out here,
right,
we're there all day, and we have this incredible community of people out here now.
That's fantastic.
So the least superficial people you would ever find.
I'm not surprised by that at all. I think just as an outsider from a commercial standpoint, like what you see on TV and what you read about in all the magazines and tabloids and all that stuff paints Hollywood and that world as a very plastic, superficial.
Oh, and you know. I'm saying they're not wrong. That's here. That's here. You need to seek out the authentic people, but they are here in large masses. They just don't make the, you know, the front of the rag paper on the stands as you're checking out your groceries.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. So now I'm going to move into your latest project. And you tell me, fill me in on all the details on this. You just completed a pilot for a show called Triage that you wrote.
That is correct.
For ABC. And this is like your first fully produced pilot, network pilot?
Amen. Yes.
Now, let's be clear. This just happened. Like, it's just overnight success, right? I mean, it's not like you wrote
overnight.
The script.
Yeah,
like you wrote the script a decade ago or anything, right?
Yeah, no, this is so easy. This one just... just rolled right off my desk and into production.
But didn't you write this like almost 10 years ago or start working on it at the time when you were still living in New York? And I knew, you know, you and I were hanging out from time to time with our mutual friends. And this was one of the early ones, wasn't it?
It wasn't New York, but it does have a long tail.
Yeah. Tell me a tale.
Well, boy, I mean, I do remember when I first came up. So the premise of the show, just for the listeners, the premise is that it's a medical drama that's told over three distinct decades. So it's called Triage or Tri-Age. So you're getting to know...
Which is very clever, I think.
Thank
very
you.
Very clever.
You're getting to know these doctors, the evolution of medicine and technology, all the advancements over these decades, but you're also seeing the advancements and evolution of these relationships among the doctors. So, you know, the goal was always by the end of the pilot, oh my God, I feel like they're my lifelong friends. I feel like I've known these people. So it's a different way to work within, you know, a very popular milieu of medical drama on a network show, but how do we explore characters in a different way? Kind of back to the point of, What is the reason why you want to tell this show? You know, the main character, how much can I say? So the main character in this, without giving too much away, suffers an injury, a traumatic brain injury in the pilot episode. Mm-hmm. And this all came from a very real place for me. My dad had suffered a traumatic brain injury when I was in my 20s. And, you know, I'm one of six boys. So, you know, dad was not known for his patience. we have six boys, that is understandable. But, you know, we were told he was never going to wake up. And that if he did, he would be a vegetable. And it was like one of the worst moments of my life was, you know, all six boys and my mom in the room around my dad, doctors telling us, this does not look good.
Yeah. You know?
And he fortunately did wake up. And it was about a year and a half, 2 years of really bad short-term memory. You would have the same conversation with him over and over again. And we thought maybe that would just always be the case. But he came back 100% and just looks back at his life in a different way. We call him Dad 2.0. You know, he just has an appreciation. I think all the things we were talking about, the present moment, is very much what this show is about. It's about our relationship to time. So ultimately, that's the driver of the show. Yes, it's a medical drama because time in the face of mortality, you know, things become much clearer. And so we get to explore that on this show. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it did go through many iterations. I remember when I kind of came up with the idea before the name of the show. I remember running out of my office and saying, Milena, what if it's called Triage? And we already knew it was three decades. And she's like, oh, there it is. And, you know, so I set it up originally at another studio and network. I won't say where. Mm-hmm. And then got the rights back after there was a change of the guard at the network, which happens a lot. You think, okay, this is going to go. And all the people who loved the pitch, you spend all the time pitching to these people and building a relationship. And then they're like, hey, I'm moving on from this place. And so it's your show. So you would then have to start all over. So that happened to Triage once or twice. And, you know, third time's a charm. So for a Triage. And we finally, it had been optioned. It was kind of sitting there. Mm-hmm. And I finally said, hey, let me take a fresh look at this. They agreed. I wrote a version that was intended for ABC, mm-hmm. you know, because there've been different versions of this where it's like a little more cable driven, things like that. So this is ABC. Let's focus on the relationships. Let's focus on the soap. And next thing I knew was very fast at that point. I think I had the meeting with the studio in November. Mm-hmm. I delivered an outline just before Christmas. Mm-hmm. I delivered the script January 3rd. I was pitching ABC end of January, and they said, okay, we're going to make this into a pilot. So the last part of it was lightning speed compared to things that normally happen in this town. And I remember getting the phone call from ABC, hanging up and turning to Milena and saying, I'm actually going to get a pilot made. I mean, unless the world blows up. And then we got COVID. So, well, sorry, done, everyone. It was my career's fault.
But I mean, you again, if I remember correctly, talking with Milena and I think even Matt.
Dear friend.
Scheduled for a later shoot date anyway.
We were possibly going to stay on schedule because we were going to be the first show that ABC did in what they call the second cycle, mm-hmm. because pilot season just doesn't really make a lot of sense. If everyone in town is trying to shoot a show at the same time, resources are limited. Everyone's fighting for time and space and talent and energy. And so ABC and everyone in town is like, maybe we branch this out and start having different cycles for mm-hmm. when we're doing content. So we were going to shoot over the summer, which also aligned with our very fancy director's schedule. We were very, very lucky to get John Chu on board, mm-hmm. who directed Crazy Rich Asians, mm-hmm. and most recently In the Heights. And now he's working on Wicked. Wow. The guy's busy. So, you know, we were going to shoot in July, but then COVID came and it was not going to happen. We did have the opportunity to put together a mini writer's room, which is also something that is happening more often. Networks want to say, okay, we love the pilot, but where are you going with the story? Let's pay some writers to kind of map this out a little bit more so we have a sense of the show before we say, okay, we're going to give you a green light. So minimal costs in the grand scheme of things on their mm-hmm. part to get a better sense of the show. And it's also good for the writers to get a running head start and not deliver a pilot and they say, okay, ready, set, go. And you kind of have to start flat footed and get your stride. So July rolled around. They said, no, COVID, of course, we all understood. And we pretty much thought post-vaccine. But then John had some scheduling things that were coming up. And they said in, I think, late summer, early fall, okay, you're going in November, December. So we shot the pilot in LA, late November, early December, at the height of COVID here, when everyone was getting COVID. So it was interesting. It was very challenging.
Yeah.
And we were one positive case away from having to shut down production. and you know, you get basically a three strike rule.
Really?
So yeah. So we just barely, by some miracle, made it through.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, got a great pilot. I'll tell you, this whole experience has been magical. It really has. Erica Messer, who is the showrunner, who ran Criminal Minds for a decade, is the greatest collaborator and partner and, you know, friend. And she's really, you know, helped shepherd this forward every step of the way. I love working with her. And yeah. John, just tons of vision. The show looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
And the actors, every single one of them just brought, we kind of had we said as a rule, the executive producers were like, we have to have a no asshole policy on the show. You have actors playing themselves in three decades. You can't mm-hmm. write them off the show. So they just need to be a good person.
Sure.
And boy, we got that. They're
That's
all
awesome.
Just amazing actors and amazing humans. So we had a great time. It was
fantastic.
It was just, and so we just delivered it, and now we're in the pilot wait and see.
So that's where you are now. You're waiting for the quote unquote green light.
Correct.
To see if
Correct.
The network wants to pick it up and then, you know, move on with the rest of the first season.
Correct. And there are so many things that are out of your control, and mm-hmm. You know, it's very difficult to predict what
sure.
the outcome will be. But I will tell you that I feel very good about how the pilot turned out. It's the story I meant to tell.
You're my friend, and I'm very, very excited, and have been for several months when, you know, the news first broke that this was happening for you. And it was like, oh, yay, finally. And again, I know that you've had so many other things happen that none of us know about, or very few of us know about, which I'd love to hear more. But it's like, I was listening to, a podcast interview with, Ben Schwartz. Middle Ditch and Schwartz. They had this improv comedy, like 3 or 4 episodes series on Netflix. You'd know him if you saw him. He's in everything. But I bring this up to connect it to what you experience about how hard it is to get a show on TV, because all the things that you just talked about, all the positives, the great team, the great writing, the great acting, the great energy, the collaboration, yay. And you know, he was talking about how the first pilot that he ever got cast in as an actor, it was him and he was opposite Richard Dreyfuss and Mary Steenburgen and one other person who you were just going, oh, and it was directed, I think, by either James L. Brooks or James Burroughs.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just going, oh, he's like, didn't get picked up.
Right.
So
there are so many, and you know, we don't really think about those. We just see the shows on TV and think that's it. But
course.
There are so many shows that get a pilot and don't get made. And I'll tell you, every single time we drive by one of the big billboards in town of
yeah.
a show, I point at it, I go, that's a miracle. That is a miracle. It just doesn't happen very often.
Can you talk a little bit about how difficult it is to get a show on TV?
I've been here 10 years.
Talk to me if you can about that, the correlation or the parallels between being a writer mm-hmm. and being an actor. While I know that you don't consider yourself one, but you're married to one and you've been around enough of us, you know enough of us, you know what we go through.
Right.
What are the parallels? What are the differences between what I do and what you do?
That's a really good question. I think that in some ways, actors have to deal with a lot more rejection on a regular basis.
Hmm.
Just over and over, audition after audition.
Right.
There's tons of little auditions that come up and they got it or they didn't. And and how do you not internalize that if you don't get it? And just keep bringing your game. It's not about you. There's too many variables for you to factor in to figure it out. You have to have a really healthy mindset on a consistent basis. Writers, it's more the big swings.
Mm-hmm.
You can only do 2 or 3 projects a year. And so it's not 3 auditions a week. It's 3 projects a year. And
right.
you go up at bat. And if you strike 3 out, then that was your year. So you have to choose wisely, and I'm doing a much better job at that as well. Like, it's not enough for it to be a great idea. It's not enough for you to be passionate about it. You have to understand, how does this meet the moment? And what are the trends? And not to follow the trends. It's always tricky to do that. But, you know, for instance, right now, IP is intellectual property is what it's all about in this town.
Okay.
If you can get yourself a hot piece of IP, then it's a lot easier to start selling. You know, if you grab a Stephen King novel and King's like, green light, go try to sell it, that's a huge competitive advantage, and we'll move things along a lot faster. Mm-hmm. So it's building a better mousetrap. You have to, every single time, it's like, how do I build the business side of this idea so it's just as sturdy as the creative side of this mm-hmm. concept?
I mean, it's different. I completely understand what you're saying, but at the same time, like, I'm listening to your description of a writer's life versus an actor's life. And to me, it's just gut wrenching, man, because while, yeah, we can have way more rejection because we're auditioning more often, it's not our story. It's not our creation. I'm trying to bring life to your creation. And if they, and maybe the life that I'm bringing is just like, no, we want a different life. There's nothing I can do about that.
Right.
But when you like birth this thing and put in like how many hours, how many days, how many weeks, how many months, in some cases, how many years, you know, for you to put the amount of time and commitment for you to put into a project. And like you say, you get your three strike rule basically throughout a year, and to have those not go. I mean, to me, that's even more. Oh, just wear the razor blades and, you know.
I'll tell you, it is maddening. And there certainly have been dark Hollywood moments for me where I'm just like, damn, like, you really thought that one was going to go. And
how do you
move on? I will say another trick that I learned is have different projects at different stages of development.
Yeah.
So that you, if one doesn't go, you just go to the next one. You mm-hmm. don't think about, you take what lessons you can learn. That's it. And my agents would get surprised with me because they would call and say, well, it's a pass. And I'm like, okay, where else are we going? I didn't take a moment. I didn't give myself a moment to have a reaction to it.
Okay.
Because let me focus on what's in my control. If that's not going to be it, great, let's move on. What's our next move?
Right.
I always was looking for, you know, it's the, sorry for those who don't like him, but it's the Tom Brady mindset. He's not worried about the pass he didn't complete. It is, okay, that one didn't work. And he's just looking down his arm, figuring out the next play. Let's go.
Right.
And the less you think, the better off you are. Just focus on what you can do.
Because I was wondering, I was like, I wonder if you ever stop and think, holy shit, I have chosen a profession that even if I'm doing well, most people aren't going to have any idea who the fuck I am.
Like, yeah, I mean, I'm not really driven by that. Like, I Milena, when she walks in the room, she gets all the spotlight anyhow. So I'm always like, over here in the dark. I'm like, oh, have fun over there. I'm okay with that. But I do want to get my stories out there. I want my voice out there in things that the way I see the world, you know, mm-hmm. and how do I shape hearts and minds through art? How do I, you know, give them a new perspective on something or challenge a core belief that they have?
Right.
You know, that's what really drives me. And so to not have that for a period mm-hmm. of time is, yeah, I mean, Milena would in moments read a script and like, I love it. And I'm like, is this kind of a beautiful mind situation? Like, am I actually really insane? And this is all just gibberish on the page. You're just placating me. It's just like, that's not the case, David. Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah.
But you get to that place when like you go up at bat so many times.
Do you have those moments with the actual writing process where you just go, I don't even know what the hell I'm writing anymore. Do you have those moments where you just like, I don't even know what this is right now?
I don't. Okay. I really, that's the part where I fuel up. I do know my stories. I do know how I want it to lay out on the page. I have, you know, Milena calls them downloads. Like I just, I get some sort of idea of what it should be. I'm like, all right, I'll be right back. And I go in and I write it. It kind of pours out of me. So that part, fortunately, like that's the stuff that I don't question too much. It's the process of sharing that with people. Like my favorite part of writing is that moment when I write Fade to Black and it's just me and the story and no one else has experienced it yet. And I'm like, yes, because things are going to change now. Other people are going to have their ideas of what it should be and how it should, you know, be delivered to the viewer. But this is in its raw form, what I wanted to say. And it doesn't get better than that moment.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty special. I think that's a very unique experience that not a lot of people get to have with the work that they do, for sure.
I think that's what I'm addicted to. You know, that's that feeling right there. I mean, I used to get it when I was a kid, like writing songs. I would write a 3-minute song. And before I sang it and played it on my guitar to someone, I would just have written something. It wasn't there before and here it is now. And, you know, hearing one of my brothers sing it the next day, like just kind of like as they're walking through the house, I'm like, yeah, that's cool. So that's cool. That's the thing that I can't get enough of.
Is it a good thing that there's so much content or places for content to live nowadays? Or is it a bad thing because there is so much content that, like you said, it's hard to find an original idea that's going to stand out?
I think it's a good thing. It's a good thing. We have a much more fragmented marketplace. And, you know, you look at the numbers of network television 20 years ago to what it is now, it's tiny. But everyone's finding their niche audience, which means you can write a more diverse, you can diversify your creative portfolio. You know, I often think about that the way we do our stock portfolio. The trick is to diversify. I'm very much a believer in that as a creative artist, that how many different things can I, how many different directions can I go? How many different arenas can I live in? And you can do that in, you know, with so many different platforms, so many different buyers with so many different needs. And audiences out there that really seek out their flavor of entertainment, you know, shows like The Boys and Preacher, you know, those would never have happened. They're even Watchmen, like those kinds of things that where it's hyper violent, but has kind of a social message underneath it. That's tricky territory in yesteryear of television to sell that. But now, I mean, plenty of places to go with it.
So what are some of the other things that you have written or people that you have written for that we would not be aware of? Because obviously you're making it work somehow. Again, you look healthy and fit and alive. So it's not like you are a starving writer living in, you know, a closet.
Somewhere. Well, I have an orange tree in the backyard. So
See, you live in a place where you actually get to have an orange tree. So there's something that's you're, and you are a writer. So what are some of the other things that people hire you to do? Or are you able to talk about that?
I can talk about it. It might be dull to the listener. So I don't know. Like I think, you know, you spend time developing pitches with producers. I just finished up in a writer's room on another show where I was what they call the number two in the room. So there's the showrunner and then there's the second person kind of in charge of the room. And it's what can I say? I'm trying to think about It was announced in the trades as being an Apple series with Robert Downey Jr.'s company, Team Downey. That's about as much as I can say.
Okay.
I worked on that, and it's a great series and super excited about it. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of a project that I worked on.
Mm-hmm.
I've sold a few projects like Unspeakable. There's the larger project I had set up at a studio. So they bought my pilot and then said, hey, we're going to hire you to write a few more scripts. So there's a few more scripts, but that's then it languished there and I've gotten the material back. But so there's a lot of situations like that where you can make a very good living in this town. You know, it's good money when you get the job, it's good. But that's not really the goal. The goal is to share it and to have it be seen.
Now, as we start to wrap up here, so is there a timeline for you to know whether Triage gets picked up or not?
The upfronts are mid-May.
So not that far away. Actually, by the time this interview comes out, that date will have passed. I can tell you that already.
So you can do a little addendum and say, please send flowers to poor David, or please send balloons to happy David.
Actually, don't send David anything. He doesn't need anything anymore. He's good. He's set. He's all good. Since, you know, normally these interviews are about actors and acting in the life of an actor, I'm going to actually, you know, take you in the track that you're on. For the people that are out there who are writers or the hyphenates, the people who are creating their own content, the actors who are creating their own content, who are writing their own scripts, who are trying to create their own projects. Words of wisdom from David Cornu. Enlighten me, or them.
Oh boy. Well, look, I love writers. I love talking to writers. I love collaborating with writers. I actually have a workshop for writers. If you go to my website, davidcornu.com, you can see that I have something called Chapter, where I coach writers through the process of developing their story. I would say that first thing I've already kind of covered, why is this an authentic story that only you can tell? That is very, very important. From there, I would say that you really need to understand a distinct point of view in your main character that we've never seen before. Never seen it in any other show. I can't remember where it comes from, but it's, would we be able to know it's your character if we saw this person in silhouette? I think that that's a really good test for whether or not your character is iconic enough. So you really have to find, you know, what does this character want? What do they need? Which is a very different thing often than what they want.
Absolutely.
And what do they do to get it? That's crucial to every single story. Then from an architecture standpoint, what is the big twist? What is the big turn in your story that makes people go, oh my God, but of course, Luke, I am your father. Oh my God. But of course, you know, Bruce Willis at the end of Sixth Sense. Oh my God. But of course, sorry, spoilers.
Right.
But, you know, I think that that's the key to drama. It is a twist, the twist and the turn. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. But of course, if you don't have that, you don't have a story yet. So find that for yourself and then reverse engineer it. Go backwards in your story. That's something very few writers consider doing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think it's because when we read something, we don't want to spoil the ending for ourselves. Well, as a writer, you need to spoil the ending for yourself.
Sure.
You need to know where you're going. If you are driving across the country from New York to LA, you can certainly, you know, do that without a map, but it's going to take a hell of a lot longer to get there. But if you know exactly where you're going and how to get there, straight line, and mm-hmm. you will find that you have a clarity in your writing that is hard to find.
That's pretty great, man. That's a hell of an ending. That was great. You're awesome. Man, I absolutely love and adore you, and I am very excited to see what happens, not only with this show, but whatever else you're going to move on to next. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you
for the time to sit down and talk with me and catch up and see your face. And
yeah, so
you doing? You guys doing okay out there? You're safe. You're well. I know things are still kind of crazy, but
yeah, we're good. We are doing well. Lady M is actually in New York right now on FBI Most Wanted. She's directing an episode for them.
Sure.
So she's doing great. And yeah, we're good. We're staying happy, healthy, and safe.
Thank you so much. This has been You May Have Seen with David Cornu. Thank you so much for listening.
Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And if you'd like to leave a comment or review, that's always nice. You can also email us at youmayhaveseen@gmail.com if you have a comment or a question, and we'll give you a shout out in the next episode.